streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your host, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back. I gotta do right before they
call me home. Good evening, and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the streets don't love you back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. Tonight we have a great show for you. Our guest is Ms. Christina Eve Gadalis. And she's going to talk a little bit tonight about her life and the things that she went through. And by the age of 8, she had been abused. She was gate raped later on. She got to the point where she even tried to commit suicide. She was ended up on the streets, homeless, selling drugs, and went through many things. So we're going to hear her story and her testimony tonight, and hear how she was able to get through all of that to get to the point where she is today. But before we bring her on and listen to her story, let me welcome Boyd to the show.
Yes, everyone. I want to thank everyone for tuning in every Wednesday to the show. We want to thank all our supporters around the world, and we want to thank everybody for a great, great first annual Domestic Violence Awareness Walk that we had Saturday on the 14th. We want to just thank everyone who came out. Also thank Ms. Christina for coming out as well and donating the 20 cases of water to the event. We just want to give her big props for that and her and her organization's support. And also we want to thank Senator Steve for coming out and speaking as well at the event. And without further ado, I just want to give all our soldiers behind the prison walls, 150 prisons that we serve every month, I want to thank them for educating our behind the walls and all our soldiers out here in the street as well. And our next event is coming up October 5th, and that is our homeless feed that we do every month, and that's every first Saturday and every month. We feed the homeless down in Phoenix, Arizona, and Ms. Christina is going to be a part of that as well, she spoke on. So without further ado, we're going to pass the mic over to Ms. Christina. She's going to formally introduce herself, and we're going to get this message started.
All right, thank you. Thank you. It's such a privilege and an honor. Actually, it's a blessing as well to be able to be on this show tonight. So I just thank God for connecting us. I mean, you are just a wonderful, wonderful team, literally in the world. Everything that, you know, Lucinda and Boyd, everything that you guys do, I mean, it's just an awesome, awesome team in the world and blessing many lives. So I'm just grateful to God for our connection and, you know, just in serving the communities together. So however I may be of service, I just, once again, I'm just grateful to God for this opportunity to be connected to two, you know, fantastic, phenomenal, supportive people in the world, and also to be able to be on the call tonight and just sharing, you know, my story, which, and everyone has a story. Everyone, you know, learns. You know, I always say, live, love, and learn. Amen. And, you know, sometimes, you know, life comes at us different ways and different struggles and, you know, things that come out. With me, I was 7 and 8 years old as Lucinda was mentioning earlier, 7 and 8 years old, I was molested by my friend's father down the street. My mom was, you know, working late, and, you know, my dad working as well, and my sister, my older sister, kind of doing her own thing. So I, you know, trusted. And with molestation and abuse and things of that nature, there's a very, very high percentage that the majority of the time it's people we know. It could be male, female, you know, neighbors. That's just you know, just to be aware of that, you know, even with your children. So this is someone, you know, that my parents had trusted and knew well, and me, you know, me too. So, you know, here with the friend. And so, that was 7, 8 years old. My mother at the time was abusive, just verbally, emotionally. She was going through her own things with my father. My father was an alcoholic at the time, you know, womanizing. And I remember seeing him with like a little bag of some white pills. And, you know, little did I know, it was, you know, it was speed. And, you know, he smoked weed. I remember seeing the zigzags. And I just thought it was cool. You know, my pops was cool when he drank his beer. And, you know, he was a, you know, I just grew up thinking, you know, that was okay. And my mom, for some reason, you know, just, I don't know, she just hated me. But no matter what, it was, you know, there were times where just insecurities and, you know, feeling low and down and not feeling loved, not feeling appreciated. And yet at the same time with the molestation, I felt that. And I know those that are listening in that haven't experienced that won't understand. But some, you know, at it, that young of an age, because, you know, whether my dad and his drunkenness being passed out, I was able to go and get that attention at my friend's house. So sometimes, you know, you don't understand, you know, okay, this is wrong. Do I tell my mom? Do I, but, you know, and it does sound crazy, but that was a way of me going somewhere, me getting that attention. But as I got older, you know, like after a year, I mean, here I'm 8 years old, I'm thinking, okay, wait, you know, this is wrong, because now I'm feeling dirty. I don't want to talk to my parents. So I was already starting to have an eating disorder at that early of an age. So I was already, I didn't want to go to that house anymore. And I would hide out outside. And as I got older, I remember punching a boy in the face because he said, "You're pretty." So I associated love with being taken advantage of. I associated love with pain. So if anyone, that point on, I mean, it was, you know, "I love you. I think you're pretty." Like, "Oh, yeah, don't tell me a compliment." These fists will come up, you know. And right at 9 years old, I, you know, saw a Bruce Lee movie with my father, and I fell in love with fighting, you know, martial arts, anything that had to do with boxing. I wanted to be a professional fighter. But fast forward, you know, I would train in the garage with my dad just passionately, because my mind was, no one's going to touch me. No one's going to violate me. I didn't even know anything about violation. I just didn't want to feel dirty anymore. And so fast forwarding, you know, dealing with my mother's abuse, you know, we had a loving, supportive family. Like I said, my mom, you know, was going through what she was going through with my father. So, you know, she would work very hard, come home, but emotionally she wasn't there. You know, she made sure we had our needs met, but, you know, there wasn't, "How are you? How's school? How's it, what?" That wasn't it. So right at 12 years old, just to get, you know, a little bit of money, whatever, off the streets, I started slinging weed. I was able to ride my bike from, you know, this side of town to that side of town, hanging out, you know, with some gangs, and I wasn't afraid. I just had this chip on my shoulder. You know, I just, even though, like, deep down inside, you know, we end up carrying these, you know, wearing these masks. So deep down inside, I was hurt. I was afraid. I was an insecure little girl, you know, trapped in this 12-year-old's body that was like, you know, all right, I'm going to do what I can to get money. I can't ask my dad because, you know, by that time, you know, he was quitting drinking and, you know, trying to, it was just crazy. So at this point, I'm smoking cigarettes, slinging weed, you know, my grades are dropping, you know, in class. I could care less, you know, because I didn't feel like anybody cared at home. So I just wasn't into school anymore. You know, I did go, but at home, it's like, you know, you just kind of go with the flow, so to speak. You become robotic. You know, you come in, you're in your room. You know, I would get hit with the belt for stuff. I had an attitude. I mean, everything. And I, fast forwarding to 16 years old, I had a boyfriend, you know, on the wrestling team. I was infatuated with, you know, what he did. So, you know, there I am with, you know, fighting, anything that had to do with that. But he ended up raping me to teach me a lesson, literally, quote unquote, to teach me a lesson, there were just some things with him, you know, I was considered a tease to him. I didn't want to be affectionate, you know, it was cool to have a boyfriend, he was cute, you know, like I said, he's on the wrestling team, you know, at that age, 16, but at the same time, don't hold my hand, don't touch me, don't compliment me, don't tell me you love me, you know, we developed that, you know, like I was saying, we wear these masks, we're still vulnerable inside, we are still insecure, we develop low self-esteem, so to speak, but on the outside, we develop this hardness, you know, that, I'm sure you guys can relate to that, right? Lucinda, Boyd, can you guys relate to that? Yeah, you know, you end up getting hard, you end up, don't let these long eyelashes and long wavy hair fool you. I mean, I would just miss attitude. So there he was, he ended up, you know, teaching me a lesson, so to speak. So here I was once again, the second time in my life where someone that had said they loved me, actually third, you know, is my mother, you know, my boyfriend, my high school boyfriend, and then, you know, my friend's dad. You know, these are three people that I had trusted and people that I was close to, you know, people, I mean, you know, my mother. I mean, it was just at that point, you know, especially with what I was dealing with at home, my mom's, you know, abuse was, you know, taken for the worst. I broke down crying and I told her about the molestation and she didn't want to hear it. She said it was my fault. I cried about the abuse, and once again, she said it was my fault. And it was just, I mean, at that point, I literally made my ultimate decision that this is it. I don't even want to live anymore. I mean, just feeling violated, humiliated. I just, you know, my home life was, like, just miserable. I hated being at the house. I hated being at school. I just felt like I was on a, what is that, like, you know, the goldfish, you know, in the bowl. Everybody can just, you know, see my life, but at the same time, I felt so alone. I was afraid to look into my next day. Like, I didn't even, you know, look forward to that. So I did go into my mother's bathroom. She had a brand new prescription of Valium and Tylenol with codeine. And I took every single pill that I could. And long story there, I did have a 50-50 chance of living. I went into cardiac arrest, respiratory arrest, and the machines, even the charcoal that they put in my body, damage is pretty much done. It wouldn't absorb all the medication that I had swallowed. So the doctors were literally, you know, hey, we've done everything on weekend. And my mom prayed. My mom was in the chapel praying and just swore that she was never going to raise her hand at me. And, you know, but there I was, I can maybe share another, you know, just the experience at that time, but God had given me a second chance, and I knew before coming out of I was in a coma for 2 weeks in the hospital, so when coming out of that, with that experience, I knew in spirit, I felt the Lord's presence, but I also felt the glimpse of hell. And I can't even describe, like, you know, just you guys now and those that are listening, you're sitting down. You know, if you're hungry, you're thirsty, you know, you're hot, little, you know, too cold, whatever. But here you are in spirit form. All I'm sensing is, I mean, it is pain. Like, it's indescribable fear, like, just overwhelmed me. And then at the same time, I was comforted in peace with the presence of the Lord. And I was told by the Spirit of the Lord that I was going to be given a second chance. Not literally second chance, word for word, but if I came back, that it was going to get worse before it got better. So I had this unsurpassed desire to live. At that point, literally, I'm in that spirit, and I'm thinking, I mean, I didn't even, you know, just as far as, like, in being in my body and feeling, laying in the bed, like, that wasn't even an issue. Like, it's hard to describe, but there I was, I decided, whatever I have to face, whatever, you know what I mean, just feeling the presence of God at that point, you know, bring it on, pretty much. That is how I felt. Whatever, just, I don't want hell. I don't want to die. I don't want to stay where I'm at right now. Whatever I have to face cannot get, you know, worse than what I've already been through. Even though it was, I was like, I'm ready. I'm prepared. I did, by the grace and glory of God, you know, I was able to leave the hospital, come home. I mean, matters did immediately start getting worse because of the financial bills that my parents had to go through with me being hospitalized. They claimed bankruptcy. They lost their home. We had to move. Being at school, you know, of course, people were like whispering, talking, oh, she tried to commit suicide because, and of course, all the rumors. So here I was, like, I came back for this. You know, it was at the same time. Nope. Versus what I, you know, feeling that glimpse of hell. I will never forget that feeling. So, but there I was ostracized. You know, people, the whispering and the, you know, there it was just. And then I even saw, you know, my ex that had raped me. And he was telling his friends that I was a good piece of meat. You should have some of that. And, you know, talking about, you know, it was just crazy. So here, my parents, you know, like I said, they've lost their house. We moved kind of out in the country, went back to, you know, the high school that I was previously going to. I ended up, at that point, I met a boy at the school that had a crush on me, brought roses. I left them at the school. So I was just like, here we go again, right? I was, you know, already drinking. I was partying. And I just had that love for the Lord, so to speak. Like, you know, I felt him. I knew he was there. But at the same time, I was sad. I was still, you know, and I went with the flow once again with my family. You know, you're home. You're one person. And then outside of that, you know, I was walking the streets, you know, with my friends and, you know, doing what I wanted when I wanted. And so, like, I didn't have to answer to anybody. I was in an abusive relationship after that point. My mom, she no longer laid hands on me, but now she was, you know, verbally and emotionally abusive. That a lot of that did kind of stop, but she was just emotionally distant from me. So, I mean, there was a lot going on. I ended up being in an abusive relationship at this point, the whole controlling thing. And what's scary about that is abuse, you become so accustomed to it. You know it's wrong. You're fearful. You have so many mixed emotions about it. But, and it does sound crazy, but you develop, you conform to it. And you know, okay, there has to be something better. Deep down inside, you know, there has to be something better. But because of insecurity, because of, you know, things that you've experienced, because of, you know, low self-esteem, and especially how they're treating you, controlling you, you just get so conformed to it. That's the only way I can describe that. Because a lot of people, you know, women now or those that are listening to, you know, this call, you know, you will hear people say there isn't a way out. You know, there isn't a plan B, and, you know, I'm afraid for my life. But, you know, I'm here to tell you, living proof, that there always is a way out, always. You don't, and, you know, verbally, you wouldn't tell someone. I mean, just like if you were in a prison, you wouldn't tell the guard, okay, this is what I'm going to do to break out. Here's my plan B. I'm digging a hole. You know what I mean? You don't do that. You pray about it. You find the resources. You get in touch with people. And you get out and you get away, just plain and simple. And I know this is so cliche to say, but when you get sick and tired of being sick and tired, you will do something, not only and just for your life, for the betterment of your children, you know, your loved ones. And that's exactly what happened, you know, in that relationship. But I knew it was wrong, but it was being so accustomed to being told, you know, you're good for nothing. And, you know, I remember telling my mom one time, she's like, oh, I just wish I never had you. And I said, well, I was a planned child. And she goes, well, that was my mistake. You know, being told that, I mean, you just get so, you know, you literally believe what people tell you. It hurts and it pierces you. So here I was, you know, believing things. I just went with the flow. And I, because of my training and boxing and you know, you slap me and I'm going to punch you. You gave me a black eye, you're going to have two black eyes. You know, that was my mentality. Pull my hair, I'm going to, you know, you're going to have a bald spot on your head. That was just Miss Ruthless Christina. Even in the bar hop, you know, then getting into like the bar hopping stage, all of that. It was the same thing. I was going to church, come out of church, put my Bible in the trunk, switch off, would put my hooker pumps on. I call them my hooker pumps. Little platform shoes, they were always cute. But yeah, put the heels on and go straight to the bars. I had my daughter by my, you know, the man that was abusive, my other boyfriend. We had a child together. And things got worse because now it was like, we have to get married. We have to. I'm like, no, I want to marry out of love. It was just this whole, you know, like, no, I mean, this fairy tale thing. No, I want to marry out of love. And, you know, so, of course, him controlling, we got in fist fights. His family was in denial, you know, I would call them and cry, and the mom's like, oh, in Spanish, no, 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 and he comes home drunk like that, and just give him what he wants, if it's sex, if he's hungry, if his, just let him be, he'll be sober tomorrow, you guys will be fine. I'm sorry, that is not the, you know, worst advice in the world, you know, but once again, deep down inside, I know, I have a baby now, I can't have my child. I chose to finally, we got in a horrible fist fight. I was tired once again, the control, I felt like I was in prison in my home. I started planning my plan B. It was, I even was willing to, you know, just sleep in whatever I had to do. I took my daughter to whether my mom's house or other grandma's house, you know, a friend's house, wherever my daughter could stay, and I would sleep in my car. I would park out at the back of the base and just literally just sleep in my car, whatever I could put up. And once again, people had no idea. I did that for almost 8 months or almost a year. People had no idea. So all they see, oh, there's Christina whoring around. She's probably on drugs, dropping her child off wherever she can so she could be out and about, you know, getting. But people have no clue. That's not something you share with someone. I really have no place to go. You know, that's not, as long as my daughter was okay, though. And I did that, and I worked, and I hated my life. I was miserable, but she kept me going. She was my motivation. At this point, I was, you know, 21, 22. I met another gentleman that kept my daughters. I became homeless, too, because I moved. I literally had to move into another city. He would show up at that house. From that house, I moved into another apartment, like above little store. I had to tell my neighbors, like, hey, you know, I have this, you know, ex-boyfriend of mine. It's my daughter's father. He's crazy. You know, he follows me, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you have to let people know that's your safety. This is his license plate number. This is the car that he drives. This is his friend's car that he drives. I mean, I had to quit my job, so, you know, and so now at this point, you know, I finally ended up even moving in with his parents at one point. So I figured that was the safest place I could be. But after a while, you know, I needed my, you know, it was, but I ultimately, I didn't have anywhere to go at that point. I wasn't really close with my mom to, you know, okay, hey, mom, once again, I need to come back. You know, it was just, I could not afford with the job that I had to get a place on my own. Obviously, I didn't have any child support for my daughter, and, you know, that's what I did. You know, was swinging some weed again just to get some gas money, just to get something to eat. I would, you know, show up at a friend's house and, you know, spend the night. I would party, of course. But, you know, at that point, I ended up meeting, you know, this other gentleman and got an apartment eventually. You know, he was kind of staying there off and on. My daughter and I, you know, it's like, finally, because he actually would tell her dad, he would threaten her dad. So I'm like, oh, I feel safe. But the red flags were there. He was, you know, the whole controlling thing. Once again, it was being conformed, being accustomed, still had my insecurities, you know, and I went right into another relationship. But this time I got married and I had a son with him. And things with him got crazy. He was abusive. He was doing meth, cocaine, you know, smoking weed, the drinking, the fist fights, choking me, tossing me around, you know, like a rag doll because he would be paranoid. And, of course, you know, I would get in his face, you know. But I honestly believed at one point that I deserved this marriage. If I can rewind back a little bit, when I was, my daughter was 21, so when I was 22 years old, I was raped again, and I found out going to Planned Parenthood to get tested, you know, STDs and things of that nature, and when I was there at Planned Parenthood, I found out that I was pregnant, and I did not, here I was already, you know, barely making ends meet with my daughter, and being attacked and being raped, and it was someone I knew once again. So here, I chose to abort the baby. But in that decision, though, I thought I was making the right choice. There's no way I can't, you know, I can't do this. I chose to abort the baby, but that's what spiraled me down to drinking and partying like never before, because I felt happiest when I was at bars because, oh, wow, I'm around friends. I'm around people that care about me. You know, and I would literally get 86 from bars and clubs because I would want to fist fight dudes. I would walk in there looking so pretty, you know, everything. And if any of them would look, isn't that crazy? So I knew what I was doing. You know, women really do. You know, but there I was. I would end up, you know, fist fighting. Yeah, just get her out of here. Before she kills someone, you know, I used my fist to fight back. You know, I it wasn't like, oh, I hate men, I this, I that. I went out. I wanted to have a good time. I when I wasn't drinking and I was sober, reality struck. I'm broke. I'm sad. I'm unhappy. I'm miserable. I love my daughter. But, you know, what can I provide for her? I knew I wasn't making right choices, but it was like, where do I begin? You know, and then, so I'm sorry. And then fast forward, that was when, you know, right around the time that I met my son's father, that's when I got married. And then that, so when I was in the marriage, you know, back to where I left off. So being in the marriage, I honestly believed that I deserved the way he treated me because of the abortion that I had, because of all those people that I had hurt. I mean, I was fist fighting females too. I knew I could take on three people in this bar. That girl looks at me one more time, funky, cross-eyed, breathes wrong in my direction, it's going down. Like that was my mentality. Isn't that crazy?
Is that all the liquid courage?
Huh?
Was that liquid courage? The liquid courage?
Mm-hmm. Don't believe it. No, but you know what? I was a happy drunk. I would come up to the bar, Miss Pretty, you know, I'd just, oh, you know, what would you like? Something strong and sweet like me. That was my saying. And the bartender would hook me up. Give me something strong and sweet like me. That was it. But my thing was, don't disrespect me. You know, I didn't even respect myself, though. I wasn't out whoring around. I wasn't promiscuous or anything like that because of the molestation and the rape. I was afraid to let, I had this armor up. You know, yeah, you talk about that liquid courage. I had the armor up, but it was, I actually, if anything, became bodyguards, you know, with my friends that went out clubbing with me, and I would, you know, walk around and make sure that they were okay, and, you know, I was like the bulldog of the house, make sure, all right, if I lose anybody, we're going to meet at the bathroom. You know, I would tell them that, but, you know, they knew I had their back. You know, if a guy starts messing with you, come get me. You know, I was just... But anyways, I mean, deep down inside, I was miserable. That's not, you know, the way to live. I mean, you know, just Wednesday through Sunday sometimes, literally doing that and just going with the flow, work, you know, home. I mean, it was, and I just kept looking at my daughter like, there has to be more than this. So here I'm in this marriage, you know, I'm fist fighting with him, And it got to the point where because of the drug use and the methamphetamines, and he was experimenting, and he became, you know, bisexual. So I would smell, you know, he would come home and smell, you know, like a man, and he would try to hide that. So here it became the wife that thought she deserved this abuse. You know, I was just, you know, miserable deep down inside, you know, just hating myself for killing a baby. That was my thing. I just hated myself for what I did. And yet I had to become the wife that now had to take care of this man that, you know, he would have hickeys. I would have to remove his hickeys just so he can go to church and play in church. So now, once again, I'm in this robotic, you know, to work, home, feed, you know, but, you know, we would fist fight in the bedroom. I'd come out, wash my face up, clean my hair, whatever, pull my hair back, come out and start making dinner for the man. Because I was so used to it. If he, you know, called me a fat ass, you're this, you're good for nothing, you know, you got stretch marks, I'm not attracted to you anymore. That's why I go with other women. You know, the whole men thing, he was in denial, didn't admit it until later. But, you know, so having to deal with that, but I would just like, I'm still going to cook. I'm still going to clean. I'm going to be the best, you know, wife that I can be and the mother. You know, I was just through this cycle. Fist fight again, pick myself up. But what ended up happening was I started depending on food. Girl, I would pack it down. Like, I still look back like, man, I would eat 2 Big Macs, you know, I would just binge eat and just eat because I felt so comforted in a whole medium pizza. Make that pan size, please. Whatever butter you could put on it, I mean, I was going to eat it. I was going to put my diving cap on and just jump into that pie. I didn't care. You know, hold 2 liter of soda. And I think it got to the point where I didn't want to be pretty. I didn't want to be attractive, especially to my husband. I ended up contracting chlamydia from him. I stopped having sex with him at that point. You know, it was just, all right, I'm not attractive. I'm this, I'm that. I'm crazy. I would run into people that I saw, you know, from my bar and drinking days. And it was that, well, how you let yourself go? I didn't recognize you. And then you got big. And, you know, it was like, oh my, you know, so then you're hiding out. Then you're eating more. So I literally was considered morbidly obese. I was 200, over 250 pounds. I was almost 260 pounds. We're in a triple X. And I ate. I found comfort in food. I stopped drinking. I thought, okay, well, you know, I'm not going to drink. I have 2 kids now. I started smoking weed all the time. I have no idea when that door would be kicked in and my husband and I would fight. So I smoked weed to go to bed. I smoked weed, you know, before, you know, that wake and bake, before work. I mean, it was crazy. It was really, really crazy. Do you have any questions so far?
Well, no, we'll ask questions in a little bit. I'll let you finish.
Okay. I mean, just at that point back in, now we're like fast forwarding to 2000, this is 2006. And it was, you know, I wasn't close to my mom. I was married, doing my own thing. I wasn't close to, you know, my sister. I literally just secluded myself, secluded my kids. I made my own prison. I made my own hell. And when I say I made that, it's that we have to take accountability for how we live. If you're unhappy, do something. You know, seek counseling. You know, don't just sit there and wallow in it. If you know, God desires us to live holy, happy, and healthy. Happy doesn't mean you could just like wake up in the morning and start skipping, you know, singing Kumbaya all day. It's like literally just being happy and peace with peace in your heart, peace in your mind. Like no matter what, you know, if I'm dealing with financial difficulties, if I lose my job, you know what? I'm alive. You know, I'm alive. If I'm this abusive situation is not healthy, I need to get out of this. I mean, my life was threatened numerous times, both relationships, even in my marriage. I mean, he would pick me up by my throat. He tossed me around beat the whole left side of my face to the point where, I mean, I blacked out and he was still kicking me. Now, when I didn't move, he would kick me up, put me in bed. I'd wake up the next day, start making food again, just like it was a cycle. And I lost hearing in my left ear because of, you know, the damage, you know, the eardrum and just being hit on the side of the head so many times. But, you know, here it was. It's like, okay, now I'm morbidly obese. That's why I said when you get sick and tired of being sick and tired, it's like enough is enough. I cannot. What drew the line with me was my health was deteriorating. Things weren't getting any better. My children, my daughter now is 11 years old, and my son was 5. My son was telling his teacher at school that, you know, mama, you know, daddy was hitting mommy. My sister was covering my ears. I was covering her ears. My daughter and I had a plan B to where if, you know, my husband would come in, you know, from drinking or, you know, he would just be, you know, whatever, wired, come in, we would start fighting. Accuse me of things, you know, he'd yank me out of the shower. I would be naked trying to shower to get ready for work. And we, you know, there we were fighting. And, you know, it literally got to the point where we had a plan B, you know, tell my daughter, do not, if you hear him, if you hear us fighting at all, close the door, lock it, put something up to it if you have to. Do not open that door unless it's me, a police officer, or a paramedic. How sad is that? That your 11-year-old daughter, you know what I mean? How sad is that? She even had the police department programmed in her phone. Whatever town, we moved 5 times in 2 years because I was trying to get away from him. But every time he called me, gave me the soppy story, gave me the, you know, have you seen Puss in Boots? When that cute little pussycat, the eyes, the pupils get all black. Yeah. I just call it the goo-goo eyes. He gave me the goo-goo eyes. I'm sorry. I love you. I need help. Da-da-da. But if you don't see them actively getting that help, then you have to put your foot down for your own well-being, even for the safety of your children, and say no. Enough is enough. No. But I did it. Like I said, I would move. I would leave furniture behind, load the car up, move, find a place. He would come home, apartment's empty. But he would always find me. You know, I had the same job. Come on now. But anyways, you know, he'd come. I'm sorry. It was just that constant, that romancing, then the fighting, then, the, you know, that whole cycle of abuse. But when I saw that it was affecting my children, my health is deteriorating, my work is getting affected, I'm not focusing, I'm smoking more weed just to, you know, my daily functions. I mean, it was crazy. I thought, I started reading more, just realizing my daughter's going to grow up and come into this, thinking it's okay. My son is already, you know, and it wasn't about, oh, wow, he's telling his teacher. It was that realization. I was being so selfish because I wasn't looking at them. I was just going with the flow. I thought, okay, well, let me keep moving. I was running, but I had my nail to the, like, 1 foot nail to the floor and was just, even though I would pack up and leave and run, I would take them back. Or I wasn't getting myself better. I wasn't taking my kids to some form of counseling to get them better. You know, I would run and hide, but then it was the same thing again. I even moved to state away. And yet you have to get to that point where you actively seek help. You actively, you know, reach out, talk to someone, you know, prayer support, you know, just, you know, there are people that are going through the same thing, and I didn't realize that. But here I'm looking at my kids. My son would walk. He was like Linus on Charlie Brown. He would walk with his head down all the time. My daughter, you know, her grades, she was failing in her classes. My son didn't, you know, he had, you know, kids, you know, friends, whatever, at school. But it was just kind of like, at that point, when you literally step back away from what you're doing and that whole cycle, and once you just kind of step back and you look, take a really, really good look at your day-to-day life and living and your children and your environment, only then, if you can accept and take accountability, I was allowing that cycle to continue. I was allowing my children to witness this abuse and be accustomed to it like I was. I was allowing myself to continue to be unhappy, continuing to be unhealthy, continuing to just, you know, drown in my own, you know, depression and my own, oh, boo-hoo me, my own pity party, so to speak. But I was a package, you know, with my kids. Even if you don't have children, anyone that's listening to this call or the recording, even if you don't have children, there's loved ones, your brother, sister, cousin, there's somebody that looks up to you and somebody that will follow your footsteps because they will think it's okay. When you put that fake smile on and you're walking around and you're acting like everything's all honky-dory, they're going to think it's okay to be in that type of relationship, to be mistreated, to be talked down to be controlled, to be abused verbally, emotionally, physically, in any, it comes in different forms. You can't say abuse comes to only the poor people. Only, you know, I've heard that. Only African Americans are abusive. Go ahead.
It does not discriminate, that's for sure.
Exactly. It can happen to anyone. It really can. So I did take a stand. I was tired one day. Like I said, I had to step back and you know, reassess my life and what I was doing. And I was 33 years old, and he was sleeping on the bed. I kicked the bed. I had a knife in one hand and my cell phone in the other hand and his bag packed. I woke him up and I just said, I'm done. I guess the look on my face told him. But I was done. And he knew. Where do I go? I don't care. I broke down crying, but it was like a release because I knew, like, my mind is made up. And at that point, it was getting on track with losing weight. In 2006, God had given me a vision, you know, embrace life. And he was speaking to me, you know, I was remembering, you know, what happened, you know, during my coma. I was remembering. And even, you know, when I was a young girl and my grandmother, you know, would tell me, take me to church and, you know, God wouldn't allow you to go through what he knew you couldn't handle. And I would, you know, just kind of scoff at that, like, yeah, right. Like, are you serious? You know, like, whew, because I know, I'm not superwoman over here, but And then I knew all of this is happening for a reason. You are going to help somebody. I'm thinking, how? I can't even help myself, you know. But like I said, you know, making that reassessment, I was able to literally, you know, I was envisioning embrace life. So it's like, okay, that's about being happy. That's your mind, body, and spirit, you know, in balance. It's like, where do I even begin with that? You're going to help people with that. I didn't believe it. Did you have any questions now before I get all into that?
You had the vision, though. Yeah, let me go back a little bit, you know, back to your childhood. And, you know, it wasn't your fault. And did anybody ever tell you that when you were young? Because you said your mom didn't. She blamed you. She said it was your fault. You know, and then your boyfriend date raped you or raped you to teach you a lesson. And, you know, all the things that you went through, did you ever try to tell anybody other than your mom? And did anybody ever tell you it's not your fault?
No. I mean, no, because if your own mother is telling you that it was your fault, then I believed it. And that's why I said I didn't want to be pretty anymore. I didn't want people to look at me. I didn't want, you know, I didn't even touch my hair. I, you know, like I said, I depended on food. When I was younger in high school, you know, I stopped eating. So I went from anorexia to morbid obesity. I would munch on carrots, tape, Dexlax, and Xlax once again because I didn't want to be pretty. I didn't want to eat. I didn't want to, you know, I was full busted by the time I was 14 years old, so I didn't want to be noticed for my physique. You know, I have long natural eyelashes, same thing. I remember cutting my eyelashes when I was being molested as, you know, a young girl, 7, 8 years old, I think I was 8 or 9 at the time. I remember cutting my eyelashes because I didn't want anyone to, you know, so no one ever, at that point, you don't reach out and tell anyone what you're going through. It's the embarrassment, you know, it's that humiliation. But I was wearing a mask. I would be around family, have my kids, you know, even my husband. We would go to family events, put on that little happy face, and, you know, once he started drinking or, you know, we, and outside of that, I would isolate myself and my children.
Right.
And so, no one told me until I literally started going to church more, when I really started feeling the Lord and going back to church. I would, you know, just love being in service with my ex-mother-in-law. You know, I went to a phenomenal church. I got baptized. I started reading the Bible more, started praying more. So every time I would pray, change him. I would tattle on my husband all the time because I thought that's what you could do when you pray. Change him, Lord, you know, sober him up. And I got scared one time. I was praying. I was like, oh, I pray he gets so sick to his stomach he won't drink Parmesan and anything brown, like whiskey, things. It was always Parmesan, brandy. I remember praying, Lord, I pray he gets so sick to his stomach he won't drink anymore. But you have to be specific when you pray. He got so sick. He was calling me a witch. You know, you're putting curses on me. And, you know, he got sick. But I came to a realization that, wow, God does listen to prayer. But I started praying more. Like, instead of saying, you know, change him, make him better, make him different. He's, you know, horrible. I would just tattle, like cry, like I can't pay this anymore. The Lord started ministering to me. I have to change you first.
Right.
And once I learned to love, like, who is Christina? Can you imagine that? You're like 33 years old. Okay, wait, who am I?
Yep.
You know,
looking
like,
right,
who am I?
Mirror.
What do I? Huh? Mm-hmm.
Looking right in that mirror saying, who are you?
Yep.
What are you doing?
And it's never too late for a fresh start. You know, you could be 30, 40, 50 years old. I mean, even 18 years old experiencing anything. And it's never too late for a fresh start. If you know what? I desire that. And holy doesn't have to be, you know, people just like, oh, I have to be so perfect. Nobody's perfect. But it's in that prayer life. It's in that, you know, walk with Christ. It's in learning the Bible. It's in, because you get strengthened up. You learn that if and then what happened too was that, because, you know, remember I said that I thought I deserved to be in that marriage?
Yeah.
When I started learning to love myself, and started seeing who Christina was and that God had saved me and spared my life, not to live the way I was. When I knew that he had a plan, you know, Jeremiah 29:11, like he had a future, you know, of bright for each and every one of us. See, like when I just started embracing his word and just feeling him in prayer and enjoying church more, like little by little, I wouldn't fight back if my husband wanted to fight with me. I would still cook. I mean, he was still abusive. But I wouldn't take his words anymore. I would deflect. I was learning to deflect. I was like, you know, I used this analogy with someone recently that, you know, her husband is verbally abusive to her at times. And I was saying we have to learn to, like a water, a duck in the water, how the water just repels off the feathers. We have to learn, because life and death are in the power of the tongue. So we have to learn to deflect. When you're told you're stupid, good for nothing, you're ugly, oh, you can't this, oh, you're never going to da-da-da, oh, da-da-da-da-da. When they're like throwing those darts at you, you have to mentally learn to just deflect that and repel it. Like, I'm not even going to entertain what you're saying because God loves me. You know, I'm still alive. Every single day I open my eyes, I have a new day. I'm blessed with a new day and opportunity to make a positive change, not only in my life, but in the lives of people around me. So can you imagine that? Like, and then I came to that understanding too, that revelation that if Jesus died for my sins, you know, if Jesus can forgive me, I have to forgive myself. and no, I don't deserve to be in a marriage like this. So, I mean, I was literally, embrace life literally, you know, started with me, my mind, my thoughts, you know, changing the way I was thinking, changing, you know, from insecurity to being secure and confident, not as self-confidence and an ego, you know, like, I wish you would say something, you know. It was just this godly confidence, knowing, you know, I'm you know, a child of Christ. He died for my sins. Like, you know, just literally just starting to learn to just love yourself. You know, yes, you fell. Yes, you made mistakes. Yes, you... I went back and apologized to people that I could apologize to, that I can get in touch with. And, you know, people just immediately started seeing a difference in me. I started, you know, eating healthier, started walking more, little by little, just, you know, okay, mind, body, spirit in balance. I'm going to make mistakes, but it's about, you know, living the best to the ability that I can each and every day, you know, embracing life. I got a divorce and continued and, you know, fast forwarding to today, and I'm 38 years old and have lost 100 pounds. God had blessed me with Embrace Life to where back in May of 2012 to where I'm able to teach others, you know, sobriety and fitness. You don't have to be a size zero. You don't have to be a size 4, 5, or 6. That comfortability, you know, in your skin and confidence of who you are. But eating, you know, changing your ways of eating and, you know, things of that nature. Just being, you know, wholly happy and healthy to the best of your ability.
That's right. You know, we have several callers on the line, Christina, that we want to see if, you know, they want to ask you a question or something. You have shared with us an amazing story, and you're a beautiful woman. You know, we met you the other day. Your children are awesome. You know, we were just happy that you were there with us, and you know, really proud of the woman that you've become.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. I want to see if Donna is on the line. Donna, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I'm Lucinda. Hi, Rob. Hi, Christina.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for sharing your story. You know, it's very inspiring. It really is. You know,
yeah, thank
I just,
you for calling in.
Oh, definitely. I wouldn't miss it. Definitely would not miss it. You know, it just inspires me to hear other people tell their story, you know, because a lot of people feel like they're alone, that it's
mm-hmm.
only happening to them, and it's not. And, you know, like you said, it happens in any family, any background, you know. It hits homes everywhere. And so I'm just so thankful that you, you know, you came on tonight to share your story with everybody. And I know it touched my heart. I know it touched a lot of people's hearts.
Oh, well,
thank you
for that. Yeah, because I know I didn't, you know, when we go through things, it's not, you know, just for nothing.
No,
and I'm
it's
sure
not.
That, you know, you have faced things in your life as well. And it's how, mm-hmm. you know, we're already overcomers and we're already victorious in Christ Jesus. So when you know
definitely.
That, it's like, I'm going to get over this. And even now I'm facing a possibility of having breast cancer in my right breast.
Right.
But it's, you know, and it's the same thing, you know, mammograms, ultrasounds, doctor mm-hmm. appointments, and, you know, things of that nature. I was in 2 car accidents, rear-ended twice, 6 months apart, so I have a fracture in the middle of my back, 2 bulging discs, so I'm considered disabled. So it's
right.
still like, okay, you know, but it's that mentality.
Stop, right?
It's the mentality. It could have
yes.
been worse.
Oh,
I could have lost a limb.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
my kids are okay. I have a roof over my head, you know,
mm-hmm.
and no matter what happens in life, I mean, you know, just even with you, whatever anybody faces, it's always just embracing life. I can open my eyes up today. Lord, I just thank you that I'm alive.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, that's just things are going to happen. Things are going to come, life situation, but they're not meant to, but they're meant to teach us. You know, we have to
mm-hmm.
live, love, and learn. Love yourself, love one another, and learn from each and every obstacle that comes your way. And this is another analogy that I use is when I tell my kids, when something happens, don't look at what it is. You know, if your house burns down and you guys all get out and you're away, your car breaks down, your car gets stolen, and, you know, you have a sickness and illness, I mean, whatever it is, you know, consider those, you know, speed bumps. Consider those speed bumps. And I say, what do you do when you see a speed bump? You don't, you're driving along the road of life, right, your life, your day-to-day life.
Right.
A speed bump comes, you don't park in front of it.
No.
And you don't park on top of it. You slow down because you have to assess the situation. Okay, what am I going to do to get myself out of this, right? But you get over it. You slowly but surely get over it, and you keep going.
Exactly. You've grown into a strong, confident woman. I'm very proud of you.
Sure. Thank you. I'm hugging you. I'm hugging you through the phone, virtual hug.
I'm hugging you back. But yes, you do. You sound, you know, very open, and, you know, just listening to you share your story, it was just a joy to hear. It was just a joy to hear in your heart, you know, how you feel now, and just sharing this. It was. I really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. God
You're
bless
welcome.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you, Donna. We'll talk
You're
to
welcome.
You in a little bit. I'm going to go ahead
okay.
and go to... Thanks, Donna. Hang in there with us.
Okay, I will.
All right, we're going to go to the next caller, and I'm just going to read out on the next few calls that we have here, the last four numbers of your telephone. So let's go to the next caller. The last four digits are 0052. Caller with the number 0052.
Hello, hi, I'm Nancy. I'm Donna's best friend.
Hi, Nancy.
She told me about the show. Wow, what a story. Please don't get upset about this, but for some people, you know, there is not a way out. Have you ever seen that movie? I think the name of it was When No One Would Listen or No One Would Tell. The woman went to a shelter. She did everything. Her husband was so brilliant, he went and got a fake ID, bought a gun under it, rented a car, stalked her, followed her to the shelter when she left and took her children out for dinner that night. He murdered her. And he had also gotten away with murder under the Make My Day law for a neighbor, all over jealousy of his wife. It's situations like that, you know, not everybody gets out. I mean, I'm grateful for your story. I really am, because
I hear you there, and it is very, very unfortunate. It breaks my heart that, you know, because it's a growing, a rapidly, rapidly growing epidemic. I mean, even in churches, you know, churches,
yeah.
I mean, it's throughout the world. You have doctors that are abusing their wives and threatening their wives, and, exactly. And unfortunately, it's also, you know, women at men.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, I mean, it's either way, but it is very, very unfortunate. And I totally agree with you. But when I had mentioned that there's a way out, it's in, you know, before it escalates and gets to that point where it is dangerous, there's a way out. That's what I just wanted to encourage people, you know, that even with sobriety, there's a way out.
I was much like you. I rationalized. You know, that, well, I have this and I have that, when I really didn't have anything. I was just being brainwashed. And bottom line, Donna knows my story, or most of it. But thing is, what drove me back here last time, and I care for my husband now 24/7, but what drove me back here was when my counselor told my neighbor that it was an O.J. Nicole Simpson situation. And I made my mind up that MFR, excuse my language, was not going to stand in the corners lurking and cut my throat, because he would find me through DMV, and my brother's a cop. Anyway, he told me that because and the insurance, the resources told me to stick with the insurance that he was providing. So, I mean, he was slick. He could find me anywhere, no matter what I did, no matter what I tried. So I came back and decided that I was going to stand against fear, and I don't recommend that to God. I don't recommend that for most people. But I've become empowered, and to this day, you know, I've been working on it where he doesn't walk on me anymore, but I am rare. But I would rather have done that than become Nicole. And my counselor understood it, and my sister doesn't understand it. She's like, you just have to go back and fight. It wasn't about that. It was, you know, my life was going to be fear, just total fear, not knowing. And I always had to look around the corner, and knowing he had ways of finding me and the resources sending me back, which in Virginia, I really still don't understand it. Like, a friend of mine called the domestic violence people. They never called back. I mean, several different interventions were somehow or another thwarted. And it's just crazy. And but like you, I'm a survivor of molestation. My dad was a biker in a motorcycle gang. You know, he was in with the presidents and everything else. And so I understand the crazy life. And Donna and I, we've been friends since we were babies.
How sweet.
Yeah, it really is. But I don't know. I just wish I could have done something for her, if that makes sense. But yeah, I love your story. And I was like, oh, my gosh, you took Tylenol. Oh, my God, that kills your liver and kidneys. She's here to talk about it. This is so wonderful. And against insurmountable odds, you were able to overcome them. And I truly applaud you. I'm just glad that you found the resources. And I'm sad you had to sleep in the streets while doing so. But man, I wouldn't want to meet you at a bar.
Yeah, and I have to, you know, commend you for speaking out and sharing a little bit about, you know, yourself and your experiences too. And you know, it's about how, you know, sometimes people just, you know, will give advice and sometimes they don't know what we're experiencing behind closed doors, and they don't necessarily, you know, you hear people all the time, oh, if my man cheated on me, if my man raised his hand at me and smacked me, and you know what, you can't say that until you actually go through it, and it's very unfortunate.
It's very unfortunate that
you experience, you know, even with the intervention and people that, you know, the resources that you did reach out to, it's very unfortunate that they didn't follow up and follow through with you. And I do pray, like even with what Lucinda and our boy are doing, what it's just people like them that are reaching out, and even through Embrace Life, you know, what, you know, the ministry that God has blessed me with. We're pulling together. Now's the time to pull together more than ever because it's getting worse. So we're strengthened in numbers. We're strengthened in faith, you know, to be able to pull together. In the Bible, you know, I just have to bring the scripture up. In Ezra 3:1, they say they came together as one body, and we need to do that, to come together as one body and say no more.
You're so right. And, you know, that's what I love the Bible. I really do. But I misconstrued it. I had a really good friend that used to tell me, to a point, Joy, that's my middle name. She was talking about balance. But I would say, oh, the Bible says you're supposed to be sacrificing. Oh, the Bible says you're supposed to freely forgive one another. As God forgive you, as Christ forgive the congregation. And it would just infuriate her, because she knew that I was so clueless, because I thought with everything that was going on, oh, I'm being self-sacrificing. Oh, he's human. Oh, if I stay quiet, I can win him over without a word. You know.
But actually, in a sense, there is that saying, you know, you could win the, what is that, lose the argument and win the battle. Because a fool vents all his feelings. And that was, I'm telling you, I know you heard some of my stories. You know, you get in my face and, I mean, I had a mouth on me. I learned that from my mother. You know, he would say, woman, you need to be submissive. I will be submissive the day I have a man in the house to be submissive to. yeah, I did get struck down for that sometimes. But anyways, so when we learn, like what you said, you know, you don't have to fight back with words. You don't have to fight back. It's, you know, being wise and making decisions to, I wasn't going to be enslaved to it, like I said, with my daughter's father.
Exactly.
I wasn't going
to
be, you know,
be
just become this robot.
Supposed-
exactly. You know, and this is interesting now, too, because of learning the Bible, because of learning Christ's love, my ex-husband, even after the divorce, was able went to the same church I went to. Playing music. He didn't have a car at one point. I would go pick him up and bring him. I had ladies in the church looking at me like, really? And I said, you know what?
Yeah.
I would be a hypocrite to even call myself a Christian woman if I could not look at him and love him the way the Lord does. We're called to
yes,
love one another. We are called to forgive.
Yes,
so I was
exactly.
able to show him that forgiveness because abusers, and I'm not, you know, I don't want anybody hating on me and getting mad at me for saying this, but abusers themselves are victims of their own circumstance. You
yes,
think
they really
happy
are.
Later on, you know, they beat, they hurt, they ridicule, and later on they have to suffer that, and that's what I learned through my ex-husband. He's like, you
You're
think
right.
I wanted to do that? He's like, I saw you curled up in a ball. I saw you black and blue. I saw you limping. I saw you in pain. You lost hearing in one of your ears because of me. And he goes,
but
and I had to deal
you.
With that every day. So he drank more. He smoked more. He, you know, had sex more because he was trying to get rid of the pain on his own. So
exactly.
we, you know, we are, domestic violence in itself, the abusers and the those that are being
yeah.
abused, it goes both ways. It really does. So
it,
I have
really
to show
does.
Him that forgiveness. It really does, yeah.
It's like when I found out he had been cheating on me, you know, the thing of it is, because of my faith, I stayed faithful for, in spite of it all, no matter that I had opportunities, you know. He took his, but I did. But when I found out, he started beating me within a week of me finding out because he was guilty. He took it out on me for what he felt his own guilt, and I'm not justified it. But I realized, you know, I've told him after you know the somber thoughts come in. It's like you know, when you look at me, you have to look at yourself. And that
mm-hmm.
is what you can't stand. Because seeing me, you got to look at yourself. Meaning
mm-hmm.
he has to check himself before he wrecks himself. And before he realized he was wrecking himself.
I thought you were going to bust out in song right there. I'm sorry, but go
oh,
ahead.
No,
no, and you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
And it's sad because now he's totally dependent on me for 24/7 care. However, I'm not being abusive to him because, thank God, like you say, if it wasn't for the Lord and his principles, this would be my chance to get back. Everybody
mm-hmm.
says, oh, you know, this is what you could do. Do you know how much power you have? And just, I don't know about you, but what's inside me, it infuriates me because that's abuse of power. The very thing I hate is abuse of power. Haven't experienced it, you know, with authorities and da 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 da. But I'm sorry, I talked too long. I just love your story and wish that it had been me.
No, yeah,
but
thank you so much for calling in and sharing.
That's okay because I'm here to speak out for the ones that, you know, didn't make it and to, you know, tell. How these abusers will watch these movies and mimic the behaviors of the ones that are doing the abusing just to keep control. They will do anything to keep control.
Mm-hmm.
And they really just, they don't realize their obsession makes them, like you said, they're victims of their own. Not
definitely
only the domestic
sure.
violence
mm-hmm.
that they, exactly. Thank you. I couldn't think of the proper word.
No, that's okay.
It's sad. It really is sad. I'm not justifying the stuff he did and or anything like that, but I was forced to come back here for you know, because of the circumstances. I couldn't make it on my own. I made it almost 6 months one time. And Section 8 was, believe it or not, harder than living here because I knew what to expect. From him. Mm-hmm. And I had lived all my life, living with a biker dad, with women, you know, that are topless dancing at these biker parties that still, believe it or not, 30 years later, people in the small town I live in go, oh, yeah, your dad threw some hellacious parties. And it's like he was supposed to be my dad. You know, he's doing the incestuous thing, stuff that only Donna knows about. And I was telling her I'm trying to write a book, but I just can't do it, the anxiety of it. I saw him rape my mother when I was 8 years old. And her writing her book started me writing, and it's just so much stuff. It's just too hard to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, but I'm doing it.
Exactly.
And it's because of her. But does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Because my mother had called me. I didn't see her for about a year when my son was, towards the end of my son's, he's about a year old. So for about a year, you know, I just, my relationship with my mother, it was, you know, once again, it was, I was 30 years old at the time, and she called me out of the blue. Like I said, I had no contact with my family whatsoever for about a year. And my mom called me out of the blues, and she apologized. She's like, I love you, I miss you, and, you know, she just wanted to start all over. And, you know, I was going to church more, and I was still doing the weed thing, still Miss Attitude. But you know, God was already working on my heart. So here I'm listening to my mother, and she's apologizing for everything. And she's humbling herself, you know, I'm sorry for everything. And I had to thank her. I literally, sounds crazy, those that are listening, I had to thank her, and once I explain it, you'll understand. I said, you know, Mom, I have to thank you, because if I did not go through what I went through with you, I would not be the mother and the wife that I am today.
You're so right. And, you know, and the way you speak about God, I can't remember the exact verse, but it's in Jeremiah about how, you know, it became as far as my bones, and I couldn't contain it. You just, you had to speak about it, because you know that if it wasn't for your faith, you might not have been able to endure all you've endured. And you
exactly.
have endured. And you were like running the race, what Paul says, run the race with endurance, run the race, you know, to the finish.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing that, and you're helping others through, and I love how you use your faith in God, because so many people that are abuse victims have said, oh, God loved me, he wouldn't have allowed this, he wouldn't allow that. But like you said, you wouldn't be the person you are today had you not gone through what you went through.
Mm-hmm.
And your faith, those two together are able to help somebody else, which helped me, because I'm a yapper, but oh my God. You have just, like, brought stuff out of me. Like, Donna's the only one that knows, like, I'm sure other people know, but knows the intimacy. You know, my dad was a major, you know, those people won't just go away. You know, people still talk about his parties. And not only that, he was incestuous. He was abusive to my mother. He called my brother on a daily basis a fat, sloppy, slovenly, slavely, stupid, stinking pig. Now you see why my counselor wanted me to write a book. But it's so hard, because as crazy as it sounds, I still love my dad. And with my marriage, I love my stepdaughter and I love my grandchildren. And I don't want to hurt them. Does
mm-hmm.
that make sense?
No, that does, and that's we're called to love. I mean, if you look at the Bible, Jesus loved the sinners. He went to them and he showed them love. And if you can possibly get the Bible, the mini series that came out on Discovery Channel, or you know, I got that. It's like four different movies on Netflix, and it's amazing. So, because you get to see, you know, how Jesus literally loved, even when he was crucified and whipped uh-huh. and beaten, and, you know, I mean, here, and he's hanging on the cross, and he still says, forgive them, for they know not what they do. He's still praying. So he's showing us that you're okay to love your dad, you know, regardless of,
exactly.
You know, because guaranteed he's in more pain. No, I shouldn't say more pain, but he's suffering too. People that are angry, bitter, abusive, you know, even those, I mean, it's pain in general, period. You know, I did the same thing. Like I said, I would fist fight, you know, with people in the bars, and, you know, I mean, I thought I had my chest all puffed up like a rooster. You know, I thought I would just miss Thang. But when it came down to it, I was in pain, and I was like, you see the aftermath of even when my ex-husband and I would get in a fist fight. You see the aftermath. So my mother
and
was in pain
that
knowing
scripture?
That she... Huh?
Don't you love that scripture? And yet, that's what some of you were. That one's in parentheses. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
About drunkards and idolaters and da 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 will not hurt the kingdom of God. And yet, that is what some of you were. How beautiful is that?
Exactly.
And
so just continue loving.
Too.
Yep. Continue
and
just loving. Continue forgiving. And continue doing what you're doing. You know, you will
and
be blessed by
that. Is that one in Isaiah? I wish I had them verse and verse because you love the Bible and you would be writing them down if you don't know them already. But there's one in Isaiah about though your sins were as scarlet, I will make them as white as snow. God,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one there, I go to it over and over again. And, oh, there's so many. I wish that we were like on a private line because I know we've been comparing scriptures and encouraging one another to continue. But
mm-hmm.
things like that just elevate you more than any man can because it's God's word and you're
mm-hmm.
coming from God. And no one else can understand, well, not no one else, but people without faith, which is so sad, cannot understand that conviction because it's true. And it's something that's true in all your life that has been such untruth.
Mm-hmm.
It's
and God's
your
word and what he says and what he does is everlasting.
And your mom not believing you, I'm so sorry. My mom believed me, but she had no really place to go, not with three kids back at that time. This was the 70s. Well, I told her about the next day, the very next day, and Dad did not deny it when he was trying to, you know, molest me. And it was sad because, you know, she's united with her daughter, which caused even more division between daughter, mother, and father because she united with me. But
mm-hmm.
she knew because that night, first time she'd ever left us alone with him. He'd drunk, beaten down the door. You know how that stuff goes. Well, she
mm-hmm.
left, and I called everywhere I thought she might be looking for her because he had scared me so bad. And people were telling her, your daughter called. She sounded panicky. And she knew, and it just like you, that was a turning point. At age 12, I started drinking. I don't even know if Donna knows about that part of it. And anything I could to escape reality.
Mm-hmm.
And sad to say, but my counselor, even to this day, says, he told my mom, of course, he didn't tell me, but he confirmed it years later, drugs and alcohol saved my life because the pain was so great, which I'm sure you understand.
Mm-hmm.
Even with a sober, no way. And I've tried to commit suicide multiple times. Like you said, God spoke to you, he spoke to me, and I made one promise in 2005, that I would never, ever try that again, that he kept me alive for some reason, and therefore I would never try and commit suicide again. That was the only promise I could make to him. And thus far, you know, that's one I've been able to honor. But I do know that my sister and the people that revived me after, you know, taking barbiturates and Klonopin, you know how you do. You just down them. Because you
mm-hmm.
think you're going to die, and that's it. I woke up, I don't remember, my sister was going, you MFers, why don't y'all let me die? Give me a .38 and just let me blow my effing brains out. And that was my, what do they call it, that suicidal ideation thing.
Mm-hmm.
My stepson had committed suicide, and he put a .38 in his mouth, and it said, you know, he died within seconds because he blew his brain stem out. It's like, oh, yeah, that's the way to go, seconds. I didn't have a .38. Just had the pills and the booze. But if I could, you know, if I had a .38, I wouldn't be here today. I would not be here today because the way he wanted to die was how I want to die. So when I came back here, it wasn't just standing against fear. Because nobody was going to take my life. It was going to be on my terms. If my life was to be taken, it was going to be on my terms. So
mm-hmm.
you see, I had a lack of fear and a lack of judgment there. But when I come in, you know, come here, everything changed. I had a new purpose. I wasn't going to let fear rule my life anymore and someone trying to control me anymore, and I started getting the guts to stand up for myself and doing so logically somehow.
Yeah,
but, you know, as you know, that's not going to be the case for the multitude. Just not.
Exactly.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Nancy, we thank
you for
calling in.
I'm so sorry.
I just
love you. You know, you're great.
Oh, good.
You know, hang in there. Keep your head up. You know, keep doing good things.
You too, girl.
Keep on that book, little by little.
Mm-hmm.
You too, girl.
We're going to go to some more callers, but just hang in there with us, okay?
Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Nancy. Take good care. God bless you.
All right. We're going to go to another caller. The last four digits, 8207. Caller with the last four digits, 8207. Oh, I think that call dropped. Let's try one more. Caller, let's go to the caller with the number 2818. Caller, you're on the air. Last four digits, 2818. Caller, are you there? All right. They must just be listening then. All right, we're going to go to a song real quick, and we will be right back. This song right here is by OG Suicide out of Compton, California. Never Give Up. We'll be right back.
Look, homies, what's good with y'all?
What's up with y'all, huh? What's good?
Can't make no shots, man.
Can't make no shots. I mean, you know, can't give up, though. You got to keep trying, you know. Practice makes perfect. You know, that's for all y'all. You know what I mean? Just, you know, stay focused. Don't give up. You know, never give up. No matter what it is in life, you can't give up on anything. That's real. You know what I mean? So just keep your shot going. All y'all, you know.
Okay.
I look forward to coming to the game one day. NBA, man. I'm trying to see y'all there.
Yeah.
All right? Okay, loved ones. Y'all be good, all right? I just came to check on y'all.
That's
all
right.
So you gotta go get it at the end of the day. Add up the digits, Mr. Yo, this your man T-Rob, the Quiet Giant, and you are listening to The Streets Don't Love You Back with Rob and Lucinda Boyd. We Global Blunt Entertainment Universal, baby. Don't forget that, you.
Hey, hey, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome right back here to the hottest radio show worldwide, The Streets Don't Love You Back. And we just want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight to the show. And we want to thank Ms. Christina for coming on the show and sharing her powerful story and message. And know it reached many people across the globe tonight. And we want to thank everybody who tuned in as well and asked questions to Ms. Christina. And we'll be looking forward to seeing Ms. Christina next month on the Homeless Feed Day, October 5th. She's going to be participating in that as well with us. And Ms. Christina, would you like to say a few more words before we get off the air?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Ms. Christina.
Oh, okay, sorry. Well, I just wanted to just close out and, you know, just encourage everyone, you know, to keep their faith and their hope alive. It does get better. It will get better, whatever you're facing in life. You know, pain is temporary. Pain, you know, won't last. Joy does come in the morning. You know, that scriptural, it's just, you know, hold on. You know, keep pressing your way. And, you know, just the resources are there. And just, you know, be encouraged. Just try to love yourself, you know, and forgive yourself in order to be able to move on and do that, you know, for others. The healing begins, you know, with you.
Amen. So that's what time it is, Ms. Christina. And once again, we thank you for all your great message tonight. And thank you once again for participating in our first annual Domestic Violence Awareness Walk, and we thank you again for participating in our October 5th event coming up. So we just want to send much love to you and your family and your whole team, and I'm going to pass the mic to the missus, and once again, just thank everybody who tunes in every Wednesday night.
Amen. Thank you. God bless you. Thank you for everything.
Well, you're welcome, and you know, I just wanted to thank you as well for coming on the show and sharing your story. You know, it's a powerful story, and it's a lot of stuff. You know, some people go through one or two of those things sometimes, maybe, and some, you know, some people go through it all, just like you did. And you know, we have to just address a couple of things that were said during the show. And, you know, we, like you said, we have to become responsible for our own actions. And, you know, we can't always just stay in that situation. You know, and we can't blame God always for, you know, he put me through this. But, you know, God didn't put us through that. Circumstances put us in that. And, again, we have to make that choice, right or wrong, like anything in life, you know, do I stay or do I go? And
mm-hmm.
as hard as it is sometimes, we have to, you know, find help. And a lot of times women have to do that in secrecy, you know, in order to get out safe. So, you know, just know that there are a lot of programs out here for women and men to get out of domestic violent relationships. There are people that can help you, that can give you the resources to help you get out of those situations, to show you the right way, to guide you down that right path. You know, so you can have your plan B in secrecy
mm-hmm.
and so you're ready to execute it. So
exactly.
You know, just, you know, if you can't get online at home, you know, go to the library and get online, or, you know, do whatever you can to try to make yourself safe or and your children safe.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to weigh in on that for a second, Christina?
I agree, because, you know, like I said, and I was at a shelter, at a women's shelter at one point, you know, my daughter's father was taking me to court as well. And, you know, they did come and represent me. It's called a woman's place in California. So, you know, just when you think, you know, no one's going to help me, I'm alone, there is always someone that is going through what you're going through. There's always a place, you know, there's one place you go to and you may not, you know, some, and I hate to say this, and I'm not saying this to discourage anyone, but I just keep it real because, like I said, I speak on experience. So there are places you can go to that you may, just like a school, you might go to one school or even a job. You might go to one job. If it doesn't work out, then it doesn't work out. You move on. You find another job, something that fits your needs. And with the resources that are out there, there might be, you know, a certain place that, you know, will meet your needs. There's always something, you know, that's suitable, you know, for you, for your children. You know, there is intervention, you know, where there's a will, there's a way, always. And, you know, I made that ultimate decision to sleep in my car versus, you know, being somewhere to have the, you know, point where I could be found, you know, just like the caller, you know, that said, you know, she chose to not live in fear anymore. You just have to choose better, choose, you know, happier, and just go from there. Do whatever it takes. And even losing 100 pounds, that was harder than my divorce. If I could just be real, real quick, that was losing 100 pounds was harder than divorce. It really was, because I mean, changing your ways of, you know, eating and that dependency. It's like a drug, you know, just with sobriety, you know, just quitting, you know, drinking, you know, smoking weed. I mean, it was just cold turkey, literally, just like no more. I can't do this anymore. And so, yeah, that's absolutely right.
You know, just like alcohol or drugs is an addiction, food is an addiction, sex is an addiction, the internet is an addiction. And there's so many different addictions out there. And you have to be able to choose what's best for you and what's not good for you.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Definitely. You know, and for the young women or men who have been abused as children, you know, for anybody out there that has gone through that and is an adult now that still needs to talk about it, there's, you know, there's people to talk to. And for kids that are going through that, you know, if mom or dad blames you and says it's your fault, go talk to your teacher at school. Go talk to somebody. Keep talking until somebody listens and believes you, because it's not your fault and you don't belong in that situation.
Exactly. Yes. And just, you know, for me, fortunately, you know, it was just something because of my experience, you know, with the coma and hearing the voice of the Lord and knowing mine was just, you know, a little bit different. But and you're absolutely right. You know, hearing, you know, even with an abuser, you know, he would say, you see what you made me do. You know, it's not. You know, it is not your fault. Abuse is not your fault. Pain is not your fault. So, you know, you're absolutely right. It is not your fault. So just keep, you know, don't keep it bottled in. I'm glad that you say that. Yeah, just keep going out, you know, just talk to someone and just let somebody know. Because when you keep that bottled in, it literally becomes like a poison. And, you know, that's when you deal with, you know, depression, anxiety, insomnia, and, you know, and all it does is just make matters worse. And you start blaming yourself and you start, you know, so just literally it does become a poison. So just talk about it, share with someone, go to groups, you know, whatever it is, but just let it out. Do not bottle that in. I'm angry. I'm upset. I'm sad. I'm afraid. It's okay to talk about it. It's okay. And like me, like I said, you know, I would walk around like Miss Superwoman, you know, nothing could faze me, but deep down inside, I was that little girl wanting to be loved, wanting to be appreciated, you know, things of that nature. You know, I walked in fear. I walked in fear of being loved. I walked in, you know, pain, but it's better to express it. It's better to let it out. It's better to share than to keep that, you know, bottled in and dwell and, I should say, suffer, because that's literally what you do. It's like a relay, so to speak, you know, when you share.
That's right. Absolutely right. You know, we had another caller that just clicked on here a short time ago, and I'm not sure, you know, if they have a question. I don't know how long they've been listening, but we're going to go ahead and give it a shot. And this is a caller with the last four digits, 4547. Caller, you're in the air.
Yeah, this is me, Lionel Basie, Coach L from Gorilla Elite.
Hey, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hey, how's it going? How's it going?
It's going good. Thank you for calling in.
No, I just wanted to call in and just support, you know what I'm saying, Rob and Lucinda, support them and just kind of tune in, kind of see what's going on out there in the world.
Exactly. Well, thank you for your support, and thank you for your time tonight. Appreciated.
All right. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Lana. We appreciate your support all the time.
Oh, definitely.
Hang in there with us, and we're just about done, but hang in there with us. All right. So, Christina, any last advice to anyone out there that has gone through any kind of abuse, sexual assault, rape, or even, you know, what you went through, and you get to that point where your self-esteem is so low and that you just feel like you can't go on anymore and you want to attempt that suicide. What is your advice out there for them?
Wow, that's a good question. For me, it was, because I was at that point numerous times throughout my life, you know, in different stages, different experiences, and each time it was hope. So regardless of how afraid I was, I remember taking really hot showers. It's something that you just can't scrub off. But it's hope. It really is. Hoping that it was going to get better. Hoping that there was an end to it soon, but not necessarily my life. I had to think of my loved ones, you know, and like I said, you know, it was hope and faith. You know, faith sustained me. Because I was able to believe and just have faith that, yes, it's going to get better. It has to get better. You know, I didn't believe that, you know, life was meant to be that way. You know, just the pain and suffering. And, I mean, literally, you know, I know I'm reiterating on that, but we literally do become so robotic and accustomed to the struggles and the pain and the suffering. But, you know, that's not okay. You know, we have to have that faith and we have to have that hope. You know, I've had scars on my wrist because I tried to slice it, you know, vertically and horizontally, however it's going to work. So, you know, and when I think back, when I got to that point in that mentality in thinking it's not going to get better and it's not, you know, you literally have to, positive outweighs negative. So you literally have to start trying to, you know, take, you know, the Bible says to take every thought captive. So it's, you know, having, once again, it's that hope. Hope and faith will outweigh anything that's negative. It's going to get better. I am going to be okay. You know, I'm not, you know, this pain isn't going to last forever. I do believe I can be loved. You know, I do believe, you know, and it's not my fault. You know, I'm going through this for a reason because, I can help somebody with this. You know, I don't want to see other children experiencing this. I don't want to see, you know, any other, you know, even my loved ones, because it's a generational curse, so to speak. You know, it can go down, you know, generation. There's a lot of stories out there, and you hear, oh, yeah, my mom was molested. My grandmother was abused. You know, it goes down and down. And my daughter, unfortunately, was molested at the same age I was. So, you know, we have to put our foot down now and then just say, so even through the pain, even through that, hold on to hope and hold on to faith and just know that it will get better. It seems sometimes, you know, those that are going through that, you know, listen to this call or the recording later, they might think, no, there's no way. But, you know, that's it right there. Don't talk yourself out of it. Talk yourself in the sense of it's not going to get better. It's not going to, you know, don't don't dwell on that negativity. Don't dwell on that pain. Believe, hope, and have faith that it will get better. And little by little, you know, your positive affirmations will just start drawing you to want to live, and that wanting to that desiring to the point where you'll do, and some effort is better than no effort. So you'll literally start wanting and desiring and start moving into that happiness to the point where you'll make choices, whether you have to relocate, whether you can finally open up and talk to someone, whether you, you know, like I did, I mean, I packed, you know, I kept moving, but that wasn't doing anything until I literally stopped, made an assessment of what was going on, made up my mind, I'm not going to go back to this anymore. I had hope and I had faith, and I started talking to people and sharing, and I started finding that others were experiencing what I was experiencing, you know, and that, once again, it was the hope, but now it was like in numbers. Because then I felt stronger, like, wow, I have people I can call. I have people that love me for me. I have people that have experienced what I've experienced. You know what I mean? It's not about who's experienced what and the worst. And, you know, it's not a competition. You know, I had one lady tell me that at a turning point when I went there to, you know, donate food and clothing. And, you know, she was just like, who are you, Miss Young Thing, walking up here? And I said, you know what? The devil doesn't care. He'll try to take you out to not worry about you later in your future of your happiness and your peace of mind. And, you know, he'll do whatever he can to take your life out now. Don't believe in his lies. It's not going to get better. Don't believe in his lies. And that's what I believed. It's not going to get better. Your life is da-da-da. And that's why I tried to kill myself numerous times. Even through the marriage, it's not going to get better. But until you can start forgiving and hoping and loving and just having that faith, then that's the only thing that will just propel you into better, if that makes any sense.
It does, yeah. You can have faith and hope and pray and all that, but you also have to take action. You have to do
exactly.
Something about it.
Exactly, faith without works is dead. So, exactly.
So you have to reach out for help. You have to make the changes. Remember, you can't change anybody else. You have to change yourself first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just don't give up. Don't give up.
Exactly.
Wow. It's an intense show tonight, Christina, and we thank you for your testimony. It's been powerful and it's been educational, and I know that it's touched many people. So,
thank you.
Keep sharing your message and, you know, your organization, Embrace Life. I'm sure it's going to flourish with people and that you can help, you know, as a mentor and a coach. And you know, we're here to support you with that as well. So let us know if we can help you with that.
Okay, yes. No, thank you so much for that. Yeah. And if anyone would like to get in touch with me, they could email me at Embrace Life. It's all one word, lowercase. Embrace, EMBRACE, Life, LIFE, and then dot, and my initial C as in cat, E as in Edward, V as in Victor, embracelife.cev@gmail.com. And I'm not trying to take away from the churches and take away from, you know, ministries and what other people. You know, God had called me to this place and position in the world to be able to bring restoration back in the lives of, you know, the nation, of the people. So it doesn't matter, you know, some people can't, well, I'm not saved and I'm not, that, you know, that's not, you know, about, you know, what God has planned for you in your life. And so if anyone wants to reach out, and, you know, it's more than just, you know, weight loss. And like I was saying, you don't have to be size one and a zero. And, you know, yes, people make mistakes, but it's about moving on, embracing life and just moving on and, you know, getting better and being better, living better. And, you know, that's what that's about.
Right. Healing and overcoming.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, healing is, you know,
Definitely. Well, we thank you so much for coming on tonight and sharing your story. And I know we'll talk soon. song, but we're going to go out tonight with another song called Life is Just a Story, and this is by Will Chapman out of Detroit, Michigan, and we wish you all a great week. Join us next Wednesday night, 8:30 Pacific Time, 11:30 Eastern, and remember, the streets don't love you back. Have a great week.
Okay, God bless.
Every day is a struggle, you know.
Constant struggle, you know.
Constant struggle,
I get it. I understand that. Gotta keep moving, you know.
You see, life is just a story that someone has to tell. You're living in this struggle, every day we're going through this hell. You see, life is just a story that someone has to tell. So try.
See, everybody first went broke like me. Bro, wish that I could fall like them ballers on the street. Living the everyday landline. Made me take a step back, look at myself and check mine. Now I ain't leaving till I get my kid. Trying to keep the distance between that hate and that greed. First, between Satan and me. And all them problems that it come with, it's more than one need. Me, been the rest of mathematics on them all. Put your hands up, drop your bag when you out them all. Send it back to the block. Big money grip, still hungry for them chips. Don't make me flip. Cardio frame with the diamond chips. I just bought a new whip, can it paint it double dip? Every day's a hustle, I'm trying to get it, trying to bubble. It's my life and my struggle.
See, life is just a story that someone has to tell. You're living in this struggle.
See the dean of 25, yet still I rise. And I'm black and proud. My people say it loud. Walking like I talk and hold your head above the clouds and smile. Never let them see you sweat, I bet. The streets is always watching, catch you slipping, chicken hawking. Shami's out here walking, listening to the music. If you pay attention, I'll show you how to use it. I flip flows on shows like life is so abusive. Adapt and overcome the struggle like how he do it. I prove it. Showing the world I am a king. Sing to the rhythm, my queen. This is your dream. Man in the building, example for all to see. Life can be a bitch, keep stroking until you ski. Stand on your own, keep fighting and never leave. Foundation is the knowledge I'm kicking, we're gonna bleed.
See, life is just a story that someone has to tell. You're living in this struggle, every day we're going through this hell. You see, life is just a story that someone has to tell. Someone has to tell. So try.